Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you. She's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
That's almost 52 years so far. The world has become a worse and worse place. Every year we have polluted more water than the year before. Every year there's been less clean air than there was the year before that. Every year there are fewer species on the planet than the year before that. We're driving 200 species a day to extinction. We're about to see that turn around. The loving planet is about to make a comeback. And that's really, really good news.
She bats last and she's coming out swinging. She bats last and she's just about taking all that she can take. And it's payback time, motherfuckers, it's payback time. I said it's payback time, motherfuckers, it's payback time. For the strip.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nature Bat's Last Radio Show. I'm Pauline Schneider in New York, and this is the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. This is a pre-recorded show, so I won't be able to take any calls, but feel free to comment on the Nature Bat's Last on PRN.FM Facebook group page. Our theme song is provided as a gift by Afrozen, and you can find more of his work on SoundCloud. Our SOS background sound is provided by 17-year-old Rian Farragan, and our PRN engineer is Jason Tobenfeld. I'm filling in today for Guy and Mike. Guy is still traveling in Europe. He is currently in Iceland, and you can just imagine how cold it is in Iceland. I hear he travels without a jacket other than his famous jacket, and so he has had to borrow a coat from his host there to stay warm. Apparently the wind chill factor is something like 17 degrees or something horrible. And it's snowing and really pretty bitterly cold. But today I think they spent some time in the hot pools and they went to a sauna. So he's getting a little R&R for a change. It's been a really nice break for him right now. He's been going and going and going, and like, I don't envy him. He's really going to be looking forward to his break when he gets home. I'd like to read the opening chapter of the book that Guy and I have been working on, Ms. Ladybug and Mr. Honeybee, A Love Story at the End of Time. For more than 4.5 billion years, the planet Earth has turned and changed, and even crashed with an asteroid to form the moon from the dust of the crash. About a billion years after Earth formed, a rich variety of life began to grow. Through billions of years, life evolved and died off. Throughout this seemingly endless stretch of time, the Earth turned and life grew on her body, and life died on her body. And life grew again on her body. Always life would grow, and then die, and then grow again, wondrous and different from before, but somehow the same. Life on Earth has always been like a wave. It comes in and it goes out, and comes in and goes out again. This journey is short compared to the journey of the universe. Earth and all the life it harbors is comprised of the dust of billions of stars that arose and blinked out within the universe we inhabit. For the humans that lived for a blink of time, Earth was the queen of the universe. She was their goddess. She was their everything. She was their mother, their father, their home, and their food. And then they killed her. They didn't want to kill her. They just didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know that they were killing everything, including themselves. They were so excited with their inventions and powers that they did not see the harm they were causing. But the orangutans knew, and the baboons knew, and the hummingbirds knew, and especially the honeybees knew, for they were among the first to die. Some of the people tried to save them, but it was already too late. From the early days of destruction, the animals had tried to warn the humans, but the humans did not speak the animal tongues. The humans believed they were superior to the animals, and therefore they did not listen to the animal languages, could not hear them. Most of the humans chose not to try to understand the rest of the creatures of the earth. Humans were an odd species, although a few listened and understood their brethren. These few humans stood with the animals at the end of the sixth great extinction to aid and comfort them. The humans, too, were going extinct. There was a great sorrow across the earth as the reality became widely recognized. This is the story of one little honeybee, perhaps the last one, who made a friend of Ms. Ladybug at the time of this great cataclysm. It's a love story at the end of time.
I have a very special guest tonight, coming across the ocean from far, far away. It is our very own, our beloved, and our wonderful Dr. Guy McPherson. Hey, Guy, how are you doing?
Hi, Pauline. Thanks for interviewing me today on the show. Thanks for hosting, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to blah, 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 chat, chat, chat.
Well, I couldn't get a guest tonight, so I figured, you know, I might as well just, you know, talk to you. So you're really good at talking. And
so I'm the consolation prize?
You're the consolation prize. Sorry.
I'm the consolation prize on my own show.
Oh, well, sometimes, you know, it works out that way. What are we going to do?
Right. Nothing to be done.
You will be inconsolable now for the rest of the show, right?
Yeah, well, until we start talking about me, my favorite subject.
Oh, well.
Then I'll be okay.
About that. This show is all about you, so I think you're going to be very happy.
Woo.
Phew. Dodge that bullet.
Yeah.
Well, it's so funny. Every day people are, you know, messaging me and asking me how you're doing and what's happening and if I've heard from you. And you do keep good contact with everyone and letting us know how you're feeling. And it's just, you know, it's really been hard for you being far away from home and traveling and exhausting. And I'm so glad that we got Ariadne to come with you and be there and be your support. She's been your right arm woman the whole way. It's just been fantastic. Can you tell us how that's been working out?
Yes, about all of the above. I've been enjoying tremendous support online, moral support, nice comments from dozens of people. You've been doing an excellent job keeping the organizers and hosts informed at every turn and asking the hard questions like, who's going to pick up Guy and Ariadne at such and such a station, and where did he go next, and where are they sleeping? So I very much appreciate what you've been doing too. This whole thing would have been much less pleasant for Ariadne and I had it not been for you keeping up with with what we're doing at pretty much every turn. And then having a personal assistant for the first time ever on one of these trips has been enormously helpful. I've been able to concentrate on the message and interacting with people at the venues who sometimes come from a long way away to meet me. And Ariadne has been taking responsibility for making sure I take my pills and get fed frequently and where's the next train station and who's got the tickets. And it's surprising how many details there are, and it's surprisingly difficult to keep up with them all. And so it's been exceptionally helpful to have Ariadne along for the trip, and also to have you, Pauline, keeping up with all the events and all the hosts along the way.
Well, it's been my pleasure. It's been exhausting for me as well as for you. I have lost quite a bit of sleep because of the time change and trying to keep up with the messages and making sure that you guys are having your tickets printed out or just even booking, you know, getting the right flights booked. I want to point out how amazing Ariadne is. Not too many people would pack up and go across the world for 3 weeks to, without pay, be an assistant in a grueling schedule. Sleeping on the floors and just maybe getting something to eat, maybe not. 7:30 flights. She's doing this completely volunteer. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah. She's been great. She's been great to have along. People say it must be nice to have somebody to talk to at the end of the day who also shares this message, shares this perspective.
Yeah.
And I say, well, it's nice to have somebody to talk to at the end of the day with whom I've become pretty familiar. So we don't talk about this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I go around all day, every day, talking about near-term human extinction. I talk about it during the presentations. That's what people know me from. So they assume that that's my life 24/7.
Right.
Which is kind of funny.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, she's doing something with, as you pointed out, no financial reward whatsoever, and it is grueling. It has been quite a schedule. Very frequently, in fact, in almost every case, the local host wants us to stay longer than we have time for. Very frequently, we catch a train or a bus that's just a little bit later than the one we'd hoped for. Whether that happens or not, it seems like the hosts who are waiting for us at the other end want us to get there earlier.
Oh, God.
We frequently show up, get rushed to an event, and start setting up for the event without even stopping at somebody's house to drop off our luggage or whatever. And so it really has been quite a tour from one stop to the next, and sometimes two presentations a day, almost always one presentation every day with no real downtime in between, just going from one house to the train station, transfer from one train to another, show up at the next train station, get picked up in a car, get taken to the venue. So now we've been on the road for 4 hours or so, and then we get rushed to a venue, give a presentation, collapse on a heap sometime after midnight. Everybody wants to stay up late talking, and then up at 4 o'clock the next morning, headed to the next town.
Mm.
So it's been quite a grueling tour, the most physically challenging one I've ever been on.
Yeah.
And it's not just Ariadne who's doing this for no pay. There's you too. And,
well, yeah.
You know, I read on the internet that I'm a doom profiteer, that I'm actually profiting by spreading my message of doom.
And
I only wish. This tour, like all the others, is going to cost me a lot of money. I'm not getting paid for any of this. And occasionally, people pass a hat at a venue, but for the most part, that has not been the case on this trip, because the culture in most of these places I've been sort of looks down on that. And so people have not pointed out that I'm operating from the perspective of a gift economy. So no donations are being raised locally to speak of, at least not that I've seen. So I'm losing money on this trip, as I do from all of them. It's, I really appreciate the people like you and Ariadne who help do this work for free by doing the work for free yourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great.
Well, you're doing the work for free. So, you know, I think, you know, we know you, we've met you, and we know how important it is for people to hear the message. And it's, I don't know what else, you know, I would be doing that was quite as meaningful. I mean, unless I was, you know, building an orphanage in Africa, which would be actually a really great thing to be doing. But I can't be away from home. I have, you know, I have important things that I have to do here. I'm responsible for my child and my home and my pets. So the, you know, this seems to be the way that I can serve and help you and help other people to get this message, and for them as well to then share this message. So.
Well, the life of service is typically not rewarded well, often is disparaged, almost always ignorantly. And it's interesting. I wrote a long time ago at the blog the willingness of some people to participate in a life of service. And for the most part, those people, I think, don't have any choice. They're like people who have a sexual orientation that other people believe is a choice, but isn't. And I think pursuing a life of service is much the same. It's completely contrary to most of this culture. And as a result, many people can't understand that somebody would actually do that.
Right.
If they can understand that they are doing it, they just can't figure out why. So, I mean, pursuing a life of service, committing yourself to serving other human beings, is not something that is rewarded in this culture. So the rewards, as always, must come from within, or from a very small group who are willing to participate in a similar life.
Or you could incorporate and create a nonprofit and make a lot of money.
Yes. Nonprofit seems like an oxymoron most of the time it's used.
Yes, it does.
I need to be the multimillionaire, well-paid CEO or whatever it's called of a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be nice?
So the organization might not profit, but the people working for it do.
Right, exactly. Oh, God. Yeah, I think you're the prophet of doom is definitely not profiteering.
Right, yes. Yes, it's all in the spelling, isn't it?
Right, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, and on that same story, on that same theme, you know, where you're getting a lot of people who do respond well to the message and to you, but they have a few people who don't. And I, you know, not only do they not respond well, they become actually quite nasty. And I was wondering why you think that is.
My message terrifies some people. They haven't really absorbed that everybody dies, and that in this case, the data and projections and models and assessments indicate that many people are going to die sooner than they anticipated. In addition, most people don't have any sort of understanding of biology, much less conservation biology.
Hmm.
So they don't know that species go extinct.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we tend to think of ourselves as being quite special. As Farley Mowat wrote, we're under the gross misconception that we're a good species going somewhere important.
Yes. Right.
And right, and it's obviously a misconception. All species go extinct.
Well,
and so
our specialness is built into the language.
Yes.
You know, we are
absolutely
a higher species, you know, the whole thing.
Right. Yes, the language of patriarchy.
Yes.
And, of course, most people capitulate to that, not even knowing what it is or what it means. And so we have these built-in assumptions whenever we use the language. I'm reminded of some great work by the linguist George Lakoff at Berkeley, and he points out, as a minor example, if you agree to have a debate on tax relief, you have lost.
Right.
Because if you believe taxes are something you must be relieved from,
mm-hmm.
then the game is up. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he points out the power of language, and I see that every day with
yeah.
respect to how special we are. On this tour, I've been stretching my arms all the way out and pointing out that if my arm span is the 13.8 billion years of the universe's history, 13.8 billion years, then our species, Homo sapiens, is represented by the last few cells at the end of my middle finger, way out here.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we think we're so special. We think the universe is all about us. It's pretty weird when you look at it that way.
It took 13 billion years so that we could be here. That's
right.
It's the foundation for us.
Exactly. It's a good thing the universe got started when it did.
Yeah.
Or we might, you know, otherwise we might not have shown up yet. That'd be inconvenient. We'd have a hard time having this conversation if we weren't.
I know. What do you think's going to happen when we go extinct? The universe is going to implode without us. It's not going to be able to take it.
Not only that, but climate scientists are going to have a hard time getting their papers published. Especially the one that reports that we've gone extinct.
Right.
And by the way, it will take that before any mainstream climate scientist will admit that we've gone extinct.
Right, exactly.
Or that we're even headed that way.
Right, exactly. Oh man. That's so sad and funny at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think that a lot of, you know, there's a point of denial that, you know, is in the people's in the back of people's heads, and it makes them resistant to this idea, and it's completely understandable. I don't fault people for that. It makes me sad when people attack the messenger and instead of the message so much. But I guess, you know, when we are just humans and we're not really that smart after all. So we lump the message with the messenger. That's one of those things.
Yeah.
The Greeks did that a long time ago.
Yes, yes. I wouldn't say we're just humans. I would say we're unjust humans. We're mere humans.
Ooh. Ooh.
For the most part.
Ooh, very good. That's a very good one. Well, we do like scapegoating because that's one of the things that's come up this past week. I've noticed a lot of scapegoating and finding an object, you know, that can hold the thing that is bothering someone the most, finding the place to play, to put that blame, and just running with it. And, you know, to me that has always felt like it's very childish. It's an immaturity, and it is the inability to claim responsibility for your own stuff and to be an adult. I mean, we're not 12-year-olds anymore. We're not 5-year-olds anymore. We don't, you know, if something goes wrong, if you're playing with somebody and something goes wrong with your toy, you don't blame the other kid, you know, who didn't do anything. It just happened, you know, the toy broke, but you got to find someone to blame for the broken toy. So you blame the kid next to you. No, we're not that anymore. We're adults. So it's so critical that now that we're walking into extinction, actually running at high speed, why can't we, in these last few moments of our existence, develop our adulthood and develop a personal responsibility rather than embracing victimhood and scapegoating and just being mean, nasty people? I don't understand, you know, why we can't grow up. Why can't we grow up?
A lot of this goes back to the 15 minutes ago or 20 minutes ago when we started this conversation about this culture. Mm-hmm. This culture takes care of people and allows them to become entitled, to have a sense of entitlement. I mean, Derek Jensen writes, if you think your water comes through the taps, you will defend to the death the system that allows water to come through the taps. Once you realize that the water doesn't come from the taps, it comes from a land base, then maybe you'll spend a little time defending the land base. But we are unbelievably entitled. We have water that comes through the taps. We have food that shows up in enormous quantities in the grocery store every single time. Mm-hmm. So much food, in fact, and so much access to currency that in the United States we waste a full third of the food we buy.
Mm.
So you got the water coming through the taps, the food showing up at the grocery store, and the fuel showing up at the filling station every time, all the time. Well, so when one little thing goes wrong, you got to look for somebody to blame. It's
right.
Got to be that politician or that messenger, or it can't be me because right. I'm doing the same things I've always done, and suddenly I don't have access to everything like I did last week. So I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah. So, in essence, this whole culture basically infantilizes us and creates a natural dependency and takes away our ability to be adults and to take care of ourselves. And they even have laws built into the system. You know, you can't collect your own water or you'll go to jail, and that happened recently. You can't grow food in your garden in many places or you'll be fined. You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. and so we are these infantilized adults who, like you say, feel entitled, because just like an infant, as soon as the teat is taken away, it wants it back and screams for more. I am entitled to that. I want that. And
right.
We're not babies. We're adults. And it's not fair to anyone, not to the planet, not to the creatures around us, not to our children, not to our friends or our families, and not to ourselves personally, to not be adults with personal responsibility and to be able to take care of ourselves. And that's one of the things that I love about the reskilling groups out there, the people who are reskilling, even preppers, they're taking responsibility for their access to food and water and medicine. They're learning how to, you know, to medically treat themselves, how to save food, how to save seeds. And I just, you know, they get a lot of bad rap. And, you know, they have the reality shows that, you know, kind of makes fun of them a little.
And I think that's completely
right. And
not fair.
I mean, some of them don't stop at a little. Some of them make fun of them a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, that's just more of the dominant culture disparaging people who are trying to take responsibility for themselves, when that's
right.
supposed to be the job of the dominant culture, is to take care of you.
Right.
Not your job.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's kind of absurd.
I know.
Fortunately, on this trip, I've met people who appreciate what I'm doing. You know, some people ride a train or drive a car 2 or 3 hours to see me speak. Not because it's going to be new for them. In fact, I've had several people come up and introduce themselves and say, I'm blah, blah, blah. I know you from Facebook, and I know what you're going to say. I've heard all this before. There won't be anything new. I just wanted to shake your hand. I wanted to meet you in person.
Oh.
And those people are great. And there's been a couple dozen of them on this trip. I really appreciate that they come forward and introduce themselves and, you know, just tell me that my message is important to them and that they are glad that I'm transmitting the message.
That's
so I haven't received a lot of adverse reaction, except of course on the internet.
Right.
Everything goes there, obviously.
Right. It's the lowest common denominator.
Yes.
That's so encouraging to hear. You know, people are going out of their way to meet you in person. And I mean, you're fun to watch on YouTube, but it's a completely different experience, you know, shaking your hand and seeing you speak and interacting. And you have a great personality. You have a warmth that people instantly recognize as genuine. And they really, you know, from what I've seen, is the people who meet you are very taken by you, and they really like you. And what's not to like, you know?
And that's why I make such a charismatic cult leader, head of a suicide death cult.
Because
that's what I read on the internet.
Well, don't cult leaders, isn't one of the prerequisites for being a cult leader where you take everyone's money and then you have sex with all the women? Is that happening?
Oh, I'm missing out on both of those. with the exception of the money and the sex, I'm right there. Granted, forged my own way. And then the whole notion of me leading a death cult contrary to civilization is absurd, given that civilization is the death cult.
Right.
It's not me driving to extinction 150 to 200 species a day. That would be the dominant culture. It's not me fouling the air and dirtying the water. That would be the dominant culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I participate. I'm guilty as charged. As one of 7.2 billion people, only admittedly half or so of whom are dealing in the dominant culture. But the dominant culture is so insane.
You're not General Electric. You're not building bombs and weaponry. And that's one of the largest contributors to not just carbon emissions, let's see, misery on the planet. Yeah, let's put all of it in your lap.
So that's what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is become General Electric, so I can make a difference.
Right. Right. Exactly. I don't think you'd make it there.
No, I don't think so either. Nice. But seriously, the people I've met have been truly wonderful. It's great to have somebody send me an email message and tell me I'm going to be in Geneva tomorrow and I hope I have time to chat with you. And then they come up and we talk. I try to get to all of the venues well in advance and stay as long as people are willing to chat after the presentation, the question and answer session is over, so that I can meet these people and, you know, have a little conversation with them that might be meaningful.
That's great. You were at a university in Bristol or in Wales?
In Wales, that's right.
And there was a great photo on Facebook of you and the students, which was just wonderful. And Mike Sleva jumped on it, and he said, you know, do the Doomer musical. And he, you know what? That would be hilarious.
Yes. That was such a great group. That was just this last Friday.
Yeah.
A few days ago. And those kids were great. I don't know how or if their teacher set them up. In fact, it was multiple classes. So I don't think there was any real preparation that went on for the students there. But they were completely open to the message. They cheered at several of the things I said, and they were, at the end, they all came together and wanted to have their picture taken. They were all actually filled with a great deal of joy.
That's wonderful.
This is what I find, actually, from people who are younger than, say, 30 or so, is that they accept my message quite readily. It liberates them.
Mm-hmm.
It allows them to acknowledge, recognize that some people are willing to tell them what they feel inside
mm-hmm.
to be the truth already. So it's great fun. And that was just a wonderful example. These were all artists, of course, which I really think helps a lot. Because artists, in my experience, get the whole thing a lot more readily than other people do. So
they're
kids as young as
they're empathic.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So there were kids as young as 16 years old in that group. And I had a great question that I thought I gave a pretty decent answer to.
Yeah.
From one of the kids. It was near the end, and this kid says, I have three questions, and I don't remember what the first ones were because they were sort of minor things. It was like, blah, 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 blah. And what's your weapon of choice when the apocalypse comes? And so I answered the first two questions, blah, 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 blah. And my weapon of choice when the apocalypse comes is love.
Nice.
The same weapon I've been using for a while, the weapon of love. And it brought the house down.
That's great.
They
get it.
They get it.
Yeah.
They absolutely get it. It's so wonderful when you're with people who get it, who understand that at the edge of extinction, only love remains. You know, it's been my message for a long time.
Yeah. I know. And why can't it? Why can't only love remain? I mean, we are right now in a space where we can do good things and enjoy each other's presence and celebrate our humanity. And there will come a time where it's going to be pretty ugly and nasty. But right now, maybe we can think of ways to help us through that ugly and nasty part. Right?
Yes, absolutely. And by the way, for many people in the world, it's already ugly and nasty. For the families of the 5 million people who die early deaths every year because of climate change, it's already ugly and nasty. For people living in Northern California who haven't had water coming out of their taps for the last 8 or 9 months, it's already ugly.
Right.
So, you know, you and I and a majority of the people living in the global north are in positions of enormous privilege in that we really do get to take the time to think about love and practicing love and pursuing excellence. The kinds of things that, for example, people who spend 8 or 10 hours of their day every day securing their water and food, they don't have time for that.
Right.
But we do, and so let's do that.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I think that makes sense, you know, and I guess people might want to know how to do that.
And I want to say that I think the workshop that you and I have developed is a really great way to learn how to do that, how to prepare yourself emotionally and psychologically for not only what's coming, but just now the knowing of it is overwhelming for many of us. And I think that,
right.
that would really help a lot of people. Have you... we had such a good feedback here in New York and in California when you did the workshop out there. Have you had any requests for it while you've been in Europe?
Yes, it's been. I've had so many people come up after the presentation and tell me that they get it, but they feel lonely. How can they get a support group? What can they do next? What's a logical next step? And so I tell them about the workshop. Support groups have been springing up in the wake of my presentations. So
I know. I'm getting their emails.
And so there'll be people who somebody will circulate a list, and half or three quarters of the people in the audience will put their email address on there. And they look forward to meeting on a regular basis every 2 weeks or every month at a pub or a library or whatever. And so people are moving down that road. And then mm-hmm. the next logical step after coming to terms with the information I present, reaching acceptance of near-term human extinction, the next obvious step is figuring out what to do, what to... identifying what you love, identifying a life of excellence, and what the pursuit of it means for you. And that's what the workshop is all about. The workshop is specifically not a grief recovery workshop. It's a this is reality, how am I going to deal with it workshop.
Right.
So I've received many requests for what are the next steps. And so I described the workshop, and I've received many requests for additional information about the workshops.
That's
so
great.
I'm hoping we can start to implement that at a larger scale, either online or in person,
yes.
because clearly there's a need for it. We've worked on it, you and I, for some 15 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be nice to start implementing it for the people who want to move beyond acceptance and into some sort of action.
Yeah, I agree. I'm hoping that we can iron out the details as soon as you get back from Europe, and then we can start helping people set up workshop events in their communities.
Right. And my first host, who was one of the people who was quite active in organizing the whole tour, Mike Farragon, met me in Edinburgh, Scotland, and set up three events, Edinburgh, York, England, and Glasgow, Scotland. And he was great at the support group part, in getting a list of names and explaining to people what happens next and what that might do for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did that really, really well. I really appreciated what Mike was doing there. And,
okay.
and I think part of it came from the fact that he was an early adopter of
yeah.
the message. He formed one of the first Facebook groups, the Near-Term Human Extinction Support Group.
Right.
And he, at some level, feels pretty lonely himself. You know, he doesn't have a lot of people to talk to about it. None of us do.
Yeah.
So it was great. It was great that he was sort of pushing that ball up the hill, as it were.
Right.
Other people were sort of mixed. He had me for three events. Most of the time on this trip, I've spent each night in a different bed, so it's hard to get any sort of continuity going when that's the case.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think what we want to do for the next tour is to have a minimum of 2 days wherever you go. I think this one place night thing, it was brutal. And also, I don't think it's enough time for a community to, you know, to have you there for 1 day and then be gone. I don't think that's fair to them. When you came to New York the first time, you were here for quite a while, and it was very nice, and you had the opportunity to meet with people privately and to go to the school and to just basically hang out and answer questions. And I think that is really important. And I think that was the one part of this tour that really was not thought up carefully.
I agree. And to be fair, it's early days on this. You know, mm-hmm. This is the first tour I've done in Europe. I've only done a handful of tours altogether, really, since I started speaking about near-term human extinction as a result of climate change. So it's understandable that we're still kind of struggling to find our way here.
Sure.
And so you're right. It's been brutal after those three nights, I think it was, with Mike. Then it's Amsterdam, Utrecht, Munster, Hamburg, Berlin, Vienna, Salzburg, Munich, Constance, Zurich, Geneva, Bristol and Wales, London, Reykjavik. I mean, it's a different bed every night. It's one or two presentations every day. It's just a lot of rushing around. And I absolutely agree with you that much of the absorption of the message and coming to terms with it is best done as part of a community. So
yeah.
Participating in those informal events, like sharing a meal after a presentation, that sort of thing, is enormously helpful.
Right. But it's hard to share a meal at 10 o'clock at night when you got up at 5:30 to catch a 7:30 plane.
That's right.
And you have
a
7:30 in the morning. So yeah, they had those meals ready, but how can you function?
Right.
And and I give you credit because you're not functioning 100% either. You know, your health is compromised right now. So kudos to you.
Well, right. Another reason
that?
It's been, well, I'm doing fine. I can tell no adverse impacts on my health from the pulmonary embolism. So I think I'm doing fine, and Ariadne has done a good job, along with my wife back home, keeping me apprised of when it's time to take my medicine.
Good.
So
good.
The combination of the incoming moment-by-moment text messages and email messages from home, and then Ariadne on the road has done a good job of keeping me on my pill-taking schedule. I feel like that old man. You know, who has to take a pill every 5 minutes, has to be reminded, too.
Is your memory going?
You know, I get so busy with everything going on that it's easy to lose track of the mundane daily things.
Right.
Like eating, drinking, and taking my medication.
Using the restroom. And all those things take time.
Yes, it's pretty funny. It's commonplace when I get to an event or I'm helping set up the tech stuff, the computer with what they call a beamer here, the projector. And then I want to go to the bathroom before I start the presentation because I know I'm going to be on my feet for the next 2.5 hours.
Right.
I can't get out the door because everybody has a question for me. Hey, I met you on Facebook. I'm glad I could meet you. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about that. And so 2 nights ago in London, I just all but ran over somebody He said, gotta talk later, gotta pee. And I mean, I felt really rude. I was really rude. But you get to a point where you don't have any choice.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Given the state of my health, I can't afford to have my bladder explode.
No, definitely not. That's not good for the kidneys.
No, it's very inconvenient.
No, not a good thing. Not a good thing. And that has to get always factored into a tour when people are scheduling your events and your visits. Speaking of which, we have another opportunity to do this right. You're about to have a Pacific Northwest tour. When is that taking place?
Yes, the Pacific Northwest tour is in June, starting the 6th or 7th and going through the 27th, I believe. So essentially pretty much all of June, 3 weeks in there anyway. And kudos to the organizers, especially Rob Lynn Crawford, who's doing a great job with Crawford Productions at organizing and holding the whole thing together.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out more at the coming events tab at NatureBackLast at GuyMcPherson.com. But it looks like another pretty full schedule, although there will be some opportunity for implementing the workshop there. So that requires a couple of days at least. So that'll slow things down and allow me an opportunity to sleep in the same bed a couple of nights in a row here and there.
That's good.
So I'm looking forward to that tour in June and also looking forward to taking the month of May to work on a couple of projects. Keeping up with the climate change information so that I can update my long and formerly often updated essay.
Right.
And working on a certain book with you as well.
We have to finish our book.
Yes, Miss Lady Bug and Mr. Honeybee, A Love Story at the End of Time, has been all but done for a long time, and we need to make it done instead of all but done.
Right, right. Well, we've had so many wonderful volunteers from our Facebook groups read it and give us really great positive feedback, and I'm very hopeful that we can finish editing it, and I have one more drawing I would like to do for it, and then I think it'll be ready, and we're going to self-publish it because we have experience. I don't have experience, but you do, with publishers. It's not a stellar experience.
Yeah, well, I've had lots of experience with publishers, lots and lots of publishers, because I've done a dozen books now. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that I've had a uniformly positive and financially beneficial experience yet.
Yeah.
So I'm perfectly willing to try self-publishing, something I haven't done before.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I think it's definitely worth trying, and we have a great product that's designed for adolescents to adults. So I think it's worthy, and it was a lot of fun working with you on it.
Yes, I think we have something that is really quite good, and the people who have read it have at least said that. It's not a rehash of anything.
Right.
I think we have something to offer here that will be really useful for families and to come to grips with the reality we face.
That's, yeah, I think so too. But it's got a nice sort of a happy ending, which you wouldn't normally think that.
you know, talking about a story about extinction. But, you know, why not? We are Americans.
Yes, yes. As the little clip from The Newsroom written by Aaron Sorkin says, Americans are by nature optimistic.
Right. I mean, I think, not to give away the story, but the theme is that we are stardust, star stuff, as, you know, well, the wonderful song. Wow, my brain just stopped working. We've got to get back to the garden. It's the one thing that gives me consolation, is to know that I am a part of this big, beautiful universe. And whether I die or we all die or everything dies, we're all still part of this universe. And our atoms will reconstitute into something else wonderful. And that's fine. I think that's a good message for young people and old people alike.
Right. Yes, and you know, as I also point out, that we don't come with an expiration date, but we know that we're all going to die as individuals, and that all species go extinct. It's a question of how you live in the short time we have on the planet. That's the only thing at issue here.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we can get reminded of that frequently enough, because I think people who do live with death in mind tend to act pretty decently most of the time.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, they do. And on that note, we are out of time.
Wow. It goes quickly when I'm chatting with you, Pauline. Thank you for taking the wheel this week.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for calling in all the way from Iceland. Pretty amazing.
It is. It's pretty incredible to have this technology at our fingertips these days. It's like the kinds of things we imagined when we were kids, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. So we should make the best of it while we have time to do that.
Yes. Yes. And recognize that the time has come to pay the piper, that there are consequences for our actions as individuals and societies, and we've made a few wrong turns along the way.
Yeah.
Mistakes have been made.
This is true. But we still have time. We still have time.
Yes.
To make it right, at least within our own personal lives.
Exactly. And that's all we have anyway, ultimately, is the responsibility we take for ourselves.
That's true. Thank you, Guy. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Pauline. I appreciate it.
I'm Pauline Schneider, and this is Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. That's our show for tonight. Please make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, on the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well, Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM. Feel free to post questions you'd like us to address on the show. And please continue to follow Guy's blog, GuyMcPherson.com, for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. Mike and Guy will be back next week.
Yay!
Thanks again to everyone for your contributions and to Aphrism for the music. And until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end,
Nature Bats Last.
Mother Nature.